Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
And Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody. Just here at the board, on the dials, working the show.
Well, first off, it's a little bit of a holiday today.
It's Martin Luther King Day.
Right. Very, very, very amazing man, and one of my favorite people from the 20th century, as far as, you know, when it comes to 20th century heroes. You know, so there's a day that I think is deserved to celebrate somebody. I think it is today.
Yeah,
agree.
You know, something that I only recently came to hear.
For a month there, I thought you were about to go, well.
No. Like, you know, you grow up, you know, knowing that he's a great individual and that he did great things. But what I did not know until the last couple of years is that a psychological tactic from which I think we can all learn is his constant ability to phrase everything in terms of inclusiveness. If somebody's going to draw a circle that does not include someone, he would just always draw a bigger circle that include all of us. You know, his messaging was always about, you know, this is what our country is about. This is what our shared constitution says, and we should aspire to live up to the ideals of that. And I don't know why that part didn't get through to me for so very many years until the last couple of years when I read some articles saying so.
Yeah, I mean it's a great tactic to say that this problem is our problem, you know, and that's to make you think of, you try to, it's great psychology. How would you solve a thing if you recognize that, oh yeah, no, this isn't just a problem for this group over here. This is why this is a problem for all of us. And yeah, I mean, it's a. I highly recommend go back. Letters from a Jail, Letter from a Birmingham Jail. It's like, you know, you could read it on Wikipedia. Look that up. You know, read that. Go watch the speeches and et cetera. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, one of these people that just still holds up a lot. And you know, guess what? All of our heroes had flaws, but you know what he did as far as uniting people was wonderful. So anyhow, happy MLK Day. Anyhow, I digress. Let's talk about weird stuff.
Yes.
There was a super wolf blood tiger.
Oh, yeah.
Attack blue moon the last
super,
night.
The super blood wolf moon.
Yeah.
Did you guys see it? Did you guys get a chance to see it last night?
Man, I was all like, you know what? I love me some stargazing and all that. And then
you're big
I
on
just
the
saw
moon.
How hazy it was. And I was
was it hazy over
yeah,
here?
Yeah, it was hazy enough that I'm like, I'm not going to try. Maybe I'll peek out and see it half gone. That'd be all right.
Justin or Andrew, did you guys go see the Super Blood Moon?
Oh, I did. I went to go watch when the Earth Shadow first started and then went back out there and brought my girlfriend out there to go look at the Red Blood Moon.
No, I didn't. It was cloudy.
And then I went on Twitter and said, if you want your moon to come back, you know, pay me 10,000 Bitcoin.
Yeah, I was surprised.
I have encrypted your moon. It is unbreakable. Yeah. If you want it back, you must pay in Bitcoin.
My favorite one of those now is, have you got the one that's like, we know you've been watching porn?
Oh, we just got one of those to the Night Attack email.
Did we?
Yeah.
I know.
I sent him back. I was like, we don't even have Facebook. Get a life, loser.
Well, this one is like, we know you're watching porn. And then it's like, my favorite is like, deposit, you know, this much Bitcoin to here.
Yeah.
And then it says, if you need more time, just type like 48 hours, please, in your Notepad app. And we'll know.
In your Notepad app?
We just got...
Because I've hacked my whole computer, guys.
Yeah, you've been totally pwned.
Yeah.
We've gotten a different letter from a different email address saying, "This is my last warning, mail@nightattack.tv. You have the last chance to save your social life. I am not kidding."
It's like dude, I don't think you understand what level of crazy you're up against. Like we preemptively have pushed out the press releases of all the darkest, most embarrassing stuff.
Of all the, what are you going to do? Promo for our albums?
So this sort of segues into, I wanted to talk again about a little bit about deep fakes, because that's a thing that's sort of working its way up into Washington now. There's concern politically about this, and lawmakers are sort of considering this. Deepfakes is the ability to generate extremely realistic images of people doing things they're not, pasting photos or faces of people onto other, you know, videos. And it's getting better and better. And, you know, we've talked a bit before about, like, well, we're going to see a bunch, you know, we've already seen celebrity deepfakes, and we're going to see more of that. And, you know, I think we may see, you know, somebody go through a YouTube channel, grab somebody's face, and then make a kind of a convincing sort of version of, you know, somebody and say, "I've got this video of you doing this, you know, pay me or I release it." But they're talking about, hey, what happens when terrorists start to use it? And let's say they start, you know, let's say that ISIS wants to makes deep fakes of what look like American soldiers committing atrocities, you know, and this is the way it's, you know, phrased in Washington, whatever, and that this could have really serious ramifications, and that we're going to see the weaponization of it. Now, as this weekend and this last, you know, the news cycles have shown us, we are all very responsible. We wait 2 days or so to get all of the facts before we rush to judge. We hear all sides of something, public opinions, whatever, before we rush to judge. I'm not too worried about that, how we'll handle it. And that,
I swear, if anybody has not read John Ronson's So You've Been Publicly Shamed, please read that. That's an amazing book that in vivid detail highlights the horrors of what happens when you know, just our biology causes us to snap to judgment on things. Yep. This feeling that, oh, we have to do something, and so we hurl rocks, and then, you know, Justine Sacco's name becomes synonymous with exactly one thing.
We don't need to get into events of what happened this weekend, but, like, you know, you first hear it, and I'm like, oh, man, that's outrageous. You know, I need to say something, too, and make it clear that, like, that we won't stand for that. I feel this, you know. I feel that the urge to not realizing, hey, wait, I might be in a mob, you know, I may not have all the facts, but anyhow, but deep fakes and stuff, we're going to get more abilities to make us outraged. You know, we can take things out of context now or not give you a fuller picture, and we're ready to get extremely angry or whatever. Reporters have been taken by stuff, and we get a lot of noise trying to find out the truth of matters. Now, you know, what's the future like, guys?
Well, I wonder. I have always thought that technology and our ability to make things fraudulent has tended to go hand in hand with our ability to detect fraudulence. That as Photoshop has become more and more sophisticated, so has our ability to detect Photoshop. However, I do think that there's certainly a case to say that, well, what happens when everybody believes it for 24 hours? What happens when everybody believes it for 48 hours? What happens when a major media outlet stakes their reputation on saying that this is real for 48 hours before eventually admitting it or never admitting it at all, saying that there certainly are parts of it that are absolutely still real? We've seen echoes of that in the past, you know, like Dan Rather on CBS. But when it's as visceral as something like this, you know, who knows? It will certainly shape public opinion. And you know, considering where sometimes our threshold for stuff like this is, like, how far are we able, or how far are we right now from being able to do something like, let's say, the Mitt Romney 43%, you know, kind of clip, right? Like something that is intentionally, like, you understand by its context is degraded and maybe not a perfect thing. And yet it would be enough that somebody, it would now become like, all right, well, this was sent to us from a reputable source or a source that made sense. The person in the video denies that it was ever said, but of course they would. It's, you know, something that is embarrassing to them.
Well, there's that, but also, you know, we've seen recent things of reporters reporting on things and saying, I saw this, whatever. And that's one of the problems, too, is that, you know, somebody could say we may not have the opportunity to examine the actual video or audio or whatever firsthand as an audience, but we might be told by people who are gatekeepers of information, yes, we've seen this, we can confirm this. And I don't think our ability to be able to, you know, yes, we can detect stuff sort of, but it's going to be, there's going to be a point where we can't, but also the damage it does before then can be really significant.
And so we get like right now we're in a place where I think we are realizing that, oh crap, our ability to shape our own news feeds has placed us all into bubbles. And now we are realizing to our horror that that is a highly manipulable place to be. Essentially, we have no immunity against outside ideological contagions coming in and using our siloed nature against us. So I think we're seeing some steps in what I think is heading in the right direction. For example, if you go to Google News, there's now a constant tab off to the right that is nothing but fact checking. Like I would have to imagine that these are in general not very popular articles, but just no matter what, they're always, this is the latest round of fact checking on everything. That seems like a good step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. I wonder, you know, we've talked before about as we get closer to an age where we get to choose the nature of our artificially intelligent concierges, if we can say, no, I want somebody who's going to be a hothead and move fast, or somebody who says, no, I want somebody who's going to keep me from to reduce my chances of saying something in public that'll embarrass me later. I wonder, if just as AI is almost certainly going to be part of the problem, as this becomes weaponized, they're going to be AIs, your Cambridge Analyticas or whatever, that are going to figure out this is the right flashpoint moment. Whether you do or do not do something, the whole world will blow up over the idea of this thing. If you fake it, it will cause, you know, people will decide to go to war or whatever. Likewise, those AIs, I would like to believe, can also act as antibodies to stop us from overreacting when those attempts are made.
Yeah, sure. I think that would be neat. I think until then, you know, I think the tools like Fact Check are helpful. You know, they're prone to bias, but they're another layer of let's ask questions about this, which is helpful. But I also think that, like, I mean, you know, I try not to be reactionary on Twitter. Like, I almost never talk about current events or news or stuff, because years of teaching critical thinking, I realized that the take you have in 24 hours is not going to have all the facts. I don't talk about stuff because, to be honest, like, I don't want to look like an ass 24 hours later. And I care about that. You know, I do it naturally enough. And I can't tell you how many times we end this podcast and I'm like, why did I go there? Why did I think this? You know, and that's why. But I don't know. I think that do we need to maybe kind of start indicting hot take culture?
Well, hold on. I do think that something that you brought up is the fascinating and I think more effective idea where this would happen, where it's not necessarily that the video goes viral and nobody can tell, even for a short amount of time, like 12 hours, 24 hours, 72 hours, something like that. The most realistically damaging thing would be that it fools one person, and one person then says to a reporter, I saw this video, I can describe it to you, I can play it for you, I can't let you see it, but for whatever reason, the demand for that news is so high, the ability, the concept that that thing could be around is so interesting that then that report gets made. And so we're not seeing any of the facts. We're not seeing any of the video. But now solidified in our culture is there exists a video that this happens in. Like,
yeah.
That to me is something that would happen. I could see that happening now.
Oh yeah, sure. And I guess for we're not really talking directly about the Covington Catholic school kids thing. What happened this weekend? Go do your own dive into that. If anybody is curious,
I think we very specifically stayed away from that.
Yeah, I would say go do, but it's one of these things where there's lots of commentary, lots of videos. Now we had started with one, and then there are tons of tons of phones there, but the first one to go out there with the story gets to sort of start the narrative, and that gets to be the narrative for a while, and then it gets more complicated. We'll just put it like that, and that's the thing. I could see we could live in an age where somebody could take make a deep fake of Kamala Harris saying something she never said, and I could see that running in the first 6-8 hours. In right-wing media, going ballistic over this sort of thing, and damage could be done, before we find out, oh, wait, no, this didn't happen, and then we'll get the retaliation against, the GOP. And that's my concern
I do think, though, that the general DNA of how we've seen reaction to fraud is more like the Dan Rather thing than something that is controversial if misunderstood. There tends to be a reckoning for
I guess what I'm like, the thing that happened this week and the thing that's scary is that, and again, there were 30 kids who got doxxed, 30 kids who got doxxed, and one kid in particular who wasn't even there, who looked like a kid, who started getting death threats, right?
Yes.
And that's my concern. That's the scare, is that you get a whack job who shows up at a pizza parlor because he believes it's some sort of secret DNC controlled pedophile ring, and here you get every side's crazy. Let me make that clear. And that's my concern, is that we can, in the longer thing, truth will out, but man,
yeah, I think we're talking about a couple different things, right? Like, because I do think that we are now circling more of a conversation about how do we handle news? How do we report news? How do we want to put it into silos? How do we want, what is our professional decorum?
I guess what I'm saying is that things like deep fakes are going to give us the ability to create things that are extremely emotionally charged, that you can take one thing and show somebody what, look at it from one point of view right now that happened, that nobody thinks that was manipulated, and everybody has a world of opinions about it. Now we're getting to the phase where I could just outright show you doing something horrible or just mildly horrible, and that's my concern.
In a world where it is indetectable, then yes, like we have a fundamental redrawing of what we believe that we have to deal with if and when it gets to a point where it is undetectable. That being said, I don't know. Maybe it's just certainly there have been Tempest in a Teapot brought up over Photoshopped images. There's been controversies created based on things that were then proven to be false. So this would not be a new concept. Like we've seen situations like this before, when we had less checks and balances on newspapers and television news and stuff like that. I don't know. My hope is that as technology gives us black magic to create totally fictitious images that are literally that cannot be told from the genuine article, that we also have different ways that we categorize these things, and we have different ways that we could debunk them just by sharing all of our information.
Well, and I think that was my original response, is just as yes, we're dealing with a new type of contagion, but my hope in the form of AI weaponizing, using the data, knowing what will be the exact right hot button to press and the exact right image that'll make everyone lose their mind. And then after the fact, maybe it's it can be timed with a certain political decision being made or whatever. It is also my hope that algorithmically we build these ideological antigens, which this is something in the Harari book, you know, Sapiens and Homo Deus, where, you know, there's going to come a time that we don't even trust other humans. We don't even trust our own minds. And instead, we're going to rely on sophisticated AIs. Yeah.
It should be now that we don't trust. I mean, that's the thing is that speaking with myself in my own mind.
Right.
What is the difference between these two ideas, though? Rather, trusting human creation or trusting an algorithm to sort information? Because we already have instances of algorithms trying to replace human journalist efforts, but these algorithms are not perfect and have their own biases.
Oh, Bryce. 100%. That's part of the problem is that the algorithms we trust don't belong to us. We go to a Google page, and those are the algorithms that Google chooses. And ideally, they want truthfulness in news, but their primary goal is ad dollars. Facebook the same way. That's we live in a world where we're trusting algorithms that don't belong to us, code we don't control. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and that's sort of a growing concern among some AI researchers is that, you know, we in the future we want it like Brian's version where we have our own, but what we may get is, you know, these are provided to us by people who have agendas that our interests and their interests are not completely in alignment.
Right. Like it's different than say having a hard drive versus saving everything on the cloud because most people are not going to be able to code their own artificial intelligence program, and they're going to, on some level, have to rely on someone else's code.
How far off are you guys from being okay with, I guess, insurance against ideological corruption as a service? And this is a terrible phrasing for it, but the idea, if I could. If I could pay some amount of money, $100 a year, like I've gotten very comfortable with using NordVPN. It's very cheap and affordable and doesn't slow anything down. And I like the idea that in general, I'm not being tracked. I think that as a result, I get closer to a neutral, non-biased, I feel less manipulated as a result because I see fewer of the targeted ads and so on. I wonder how much more I would pay for kind of a low grade, constantly on. You know, just FYI, you're only seeing this article because you fit this ideological profile. Could be that this is gonna manipulate you in one way or the other, or likewise, or maybe the service, you know, keeps me from even seeing the article, where it's like, you know, you decide, I want to see it, but only if it hits a threshold of in X number of days, it is confirmed as definitely, you know, not a fraud or not a scam or whatever. I don't know what that looks like.
Number one, I think that you are definitely onto something. If we live in a culture where for a while people were using whatever that soft hack was to check out their Uber star rating, like the idea that you would be able to go to a site or pay for a service that would then spit back to you what the algorithms believe you are is something that I think would be of tremendous, tremendous interest to people. The question then is, what is the service that you build on top of that? Because that's like you correctly identified the curiosity. What do they think of me? Because by the way, just saying, I've been seeing an ad that says what all cheaters do, and it has a woman texting on a phone while her husband is sleeping. And I'm like, I got to start f***ing tracking Ashley's phone. Yeah.
I've seen that ad too.
Well, and what's funny is it could be that all of that is meant like really to encourage you to go get yourself checked out at a low testosterone clinic, right? Like they just know that sowing seeds of doubt for anyone in their mid 30s or whatever yields a higher susceptibility to messaging.
Makes you go to Roman or
exactly.
I will say the names. I've seen that thing like, and I, you know, sometimes I want to click on things in like a, you know, anonymous browser just because I'm like, yeah, what are they trying to sell me here? And you know, something, when you see something like that, you got to bet it's probably some subscription service or something, you know. But it is like this provocative woman looking at you like, look secretly, like, what did cheaters do? And I'm like, this is an awful person. This is an awful thing that I think you're offering. This is wrong, you know. And like, they have like, look up anybody, it'll blow your, and prepare to gasp. I'm like, who's that creepy?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people apparently. So,
well, enough people that they're going to build a business model on it.
Well, and so I think the second part to what you were describing, Justin, is first, I think we want to know, like, who is it you think I am? Then the next layer is, after an analysis, like, well, okay, from these are all the algorithms' assumptions about you. Which of these do you want to shape and fix? For example, the algorithms are treating you as somebody who's very red team, blue team, very willing to instantly react with outrage and participate. Now, if you're comfortable with that, then great. But here are some historical reasons where that's not turned out great, and that you actually play into the hands of people who are working against your interests. Would you like to alter your input feed in such that it reduces the possibility that you do this, because you, in other words, like, you know, it's like, you are somebody who cannot bench press 200 pounds. Would you like to become somebody who can bench press 200 pounds? Well, here is the long-term 6-month plan where I will feed you stuff that will get you to that place.
Only so, yeah.
Ideologically becoming stronger and being able to bench press more.
So that's the question. The question is, once you find out what the algorithms believe you are, is determining how much of that, even beyond whether or not it's real, right? How much you want to be real versus how much you want to change based on that idea. I mean, it does kind of get into a really fascinating idea of, like, who knows you better? Google or your best friend? Google or your mom? Like, in terms of, like,
It's like I think what I would like is to, I don't mind the idea of paying an AI ideological nutritionist to keep me healthier. So
past that, let's say you understand a thing that it's like, Brian, look, the algorithm knows.
Can I just let me interject. You know, like, have you gone to we've talked about this before, the Google page where it shows you how their ads are targeted, yes, and you can turn it off.
Yes.
Well, go ahead. Sorry.
No. I think the larger idea is, let's understand that this could be of value, like that this is something that it's like, even if you understand that this profile is being built so they can target me ads, you can then take that data and say, okay, well, what of this? Let's imagine that Google is like a friend, like a family member that's going to sit down with you at Thanksgiving and tell you, you want to know what your problem is? This, that, and the other. One of those conversations that change your life. And you look at your life and you're like, oh, wow, is that how I'm seen? I need to make sure that I'm bigger. I need to make sure that I'm better. I need to make sure that I'm emotionally more well off. Then you can take that data, even if it's cynically collected, maybe even better because it's cynically collected, and then say, okay, well, how can I create my own AI that then shapes where I'm going, as opposed to just telling me where I am?
I only respond to ads with coupons for Arby's. And that comes back to, you know, what the intent is and the incentive is for who provides it. Now, Apple started their Apple News on their phone, which I never use, but the goal of Apple News is to provide you news, and then the advertisements or whatever they do there, they're not supposed to be using tracking. Like, the idea is they don't want to use tracking. So it's in Apple, like with a Safari has been doing a lot of stuff to anonymize the way stuff works and to try to make it very difficult. And this has been, people in the ad industry complained, you know, complained about Apple thwarting their attempts to track people across different websites, et cetera. But, you know, and that's the reason Apple does it, is because Apple's incentive is charging us much more for our hardware and whatever versus being an ad company. And, you know, the trade-offs are for each of us to decide. But we only, you know, I don't use Chrome's incognito mode because it's from Google, and I love Google products, but I think Google will do what the bullet point says, but they're not going to tell me really what goes on.
Yeah, even if it's anonymized, like, everything you type into Google, every half-written word, and then you back up and undo it. Like, all of that is known.
Yeah, like, for me, when we found out, and then we knew this, that they were tracking people back at using Safari in anonymous mode, we found out that Google had had a workaround to track people doing that. I was kind of like, my trust with you is gone. Like, I like a lot of your products. I think your company is amazing in some ways, but my trust in you is gone. You know, and now Facebook is going through this problem. We've talked about that. They're trying to repair the relationship, et cetera. And, you know, because I don't think they realized how much they could damage their brand, and not to say that they're suffering, but certainly they're looking at the growth, particularly young people. It's not where they want it to be.
Well, I think part of it is for them, they thought this was a settled issue and people didn't care about targeting. That they're like, yeah. Oh, this is what we do. This is what we do. It's all available. It's not like we're hiding it. We're making sure that you get the ads that you want. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. And all of a sudden, everybody cares. But a lot of it was just their populace becoming more tech literate.
Well, there was just a survey that came out that found out most people don't know that don't even realize that ad tracking's a thing.
Oh yeah.
You know, most people still don't realize it. Like, you know that, like, this is, there's, I don't know. Anyhow.
One thing, and then we'll get into the plug. The one thing that I always remember about the lagging understanding of technology on average, I was on a subway in New York City. I was reading some newspaper, and I remember reading that for the first time, and this had to be in 2006, dial-up had been replaced by DSL and cable as the predominant form of internet access. And like, I had had DSL or cable from high school on, and it's like, oh no, that's what, you know, the world just moves a lot slower than we tend to think of it. And it's like, it doesn't surprise me that a lot of people don't know what ad tracking is.
You know, if you want to control your ad experience during this podcast, weird things, you can do that. How would I do that?
Go ahead, Brian.
You would hit the 30 second skip button starting right now. But no, man, look, you keep us live and independent by heading over to patreon.com/weirdthings. And of course, as of what, a couple weeks ago, that's straight up just split four ways. Finally, Bryce can make good money, much more than a nickel for every dollar that you contribute. 25 cents. But most importantly, if you want to support our shenanigans, there is a big PSA happening right now. Tomorrow, as we're recording this, the fifth Night Attack comedy album comes out. It's called All's Well, and it is a celebration.
Oh, Brian, how will this support my shenanigans? I'm excited to hear this.
You'll be friends with two guys who have had a third number one comedy album.
Why be delighted and laugh?
Well, yes, 100%. Okay. Guys, Justin, do you have the words to express how proud we are of this latest offering?
Look, it is great because not only does it feature us, it features somebody more talented than us, and that is Stephen Cogswell. He is a brilliant musician in Canada who, for the last 3 years, every week without fail, has created a song based on audio from the previous week's Night Attack. We combined the best work that he has done with original comedy, and man, it's something that I think is not only a tribute to him, it's a tribute to everybody who has gone that extra mile and made that piece of art for your favorite podcast, YouTube series, web forum, all that creativity. This is our tribute to that, and I hope everybody enjoys it, and apparently can enjoy it now if you're in Australia. Apparently, we are live in Australia, where it is already the 22nd. So we are rolling into that as we speak.
I'm trying to buy this. When do I press the button to buy?
You press buy on when it becomes January 22nd. So if you're in Australia, apparently right now, although I'm going back and forth with our rep to make sure it's at the right price. But go ahead and check it out when it is January 22nd. We will have it available.
Oh, okay. So I go to what? Tower Music? That's where I'm going to go?
iTunes, Amazon, Google.
Oh.
Likely iTunes will be the place where it is correctly priced. The problem is we are rare in the music industry in that we are eschewing money. We are telling them we don't want money. We just want credit.
So we're doing it for exposure, except nobody's making us. We're doing it ourselves for exposure. So effectively, we're a problem child because they have to, all these platforms need to understand that we're not here to make money. And we're trying to sell it for literally nothing.
Basically, instead of spending $12 for an album, we'd rather charge $4 for an album and have your passion and energy, but have you buy it three times on three different platforms. And because, you know what? 1,000 people can punch a lot harder, harder hole into the universe if they buy everything three times.
And then we will – look. Album, bought albums matter, purchased albums matter. Please purchase the album everywhere that you can. For the first time ever, though, this will also be on Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal. So if you don't want to buy it on the platform where it's listed correctly and you have one of those, literally just play the album all day. Hit play, leave your phone, come on back, hit play again.
Nice. I'm excited, guys. I'm excited.
God, it's really funny. We did have a total scare. One of my favorite tracks, only very last minute did I was like, hey, where is that one track that's my favorite? And this is like the day of submission. And Justin's like, oh, is that not on there? And there's like, oh crap, it's not on there. So thank goodness.
In fact, I cut a track that had passed. I made an executive decision because at the point of submission that we were at, it would have added another day for me to go back to CD Baby to up the track count. So I had to make a call on cutting a track. And that track that was on the album, approved on the album and got cut.
That fluff that didn't need to be there.
No, it was a hard one, man. It's a very funny track about where we, for whatever reason, are very mean to Kevin Bacon. But
that one got cut.
It got cut because the one that I liked, the one that we forgot better. But that is available. You can listen to that right now. If you go to our Discord or you go to my SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/JustinRYoung, there's a big playlist of things that literally barely did not make the album because we wanted to make it as tight as possible.
I'm excited, guys. I'm going to buy that. And I'm going to support my fellow weird thingers.
Yes. Yes.
You know what I think you guys should do after you celebrate the success of the album?
What's that?
And the generous, huge financial rewards you'll get, well, minus your cuts and everything else like that. But anyhow, I think you guys should go back to nature. Get away from podcasting. Get away from your gadgets. Get away from all of that. I think a nice stroll to appreciate the wonders of nature. You know, just all of the beauty. Everything's like, when is the last time you stood outside, let raindrops fall on your nose? When have you just stood out there and let the morning sun come up in the field, the healing rays strike your skin.
I breathed
in a cool mist.
This sounds like somebody trying to describe the beauty of nature who's never experienced it. But sure, yeah. I it's been far too long. I know that for sure.
Yeah,
Ryan, I can see nature through the slit between my blackout shades in my apartment
it's
here.
Like bags
I know
of sand.
It's there.
Got it. Yeah.
I suggest for you guys to experience all the wonders and majesty of nature. Bryce, do you have a video that we could show them? Perhaps they could, you know, walk outside and see this delightful experience of.
Sure.
Well, I don't know what we'd call it.
Well,
you know.
Yeah, let's just hop on a plane really quick and fly to Brazil, I believe.
Okay.
I believe is
beautiful Brazil, known for rainforests, beautiful beaches. Brazilian people are some of the most fun people in the world. I'll say that. You can call me a nationalist, whatever, but I just said it.
Sure. Okay. So we're going to just take a real quick look at Brazil here. Brian, what a...
Look at those. Okay, just don't play it yet.
I'm looking up.
We're looking up at the sky. Big, thick raindrops falling all around. That nice sky that's just sort of the slate gray going over the green hills.
I mean, it seems lovely. It seems like it looks maybe a little bit like the opening of the movie Flash Gordon, where rocks are falling from the sky, but...
It's a little overcast. I mean, certainly the rolling hills, the emerald green, inspiring. But it looks like there's maybe something. Yeah, there's stuff in the air, Andrew.
It's just the lighting angle.
Oh, are you sure?
Well, thank goodness. Then I suppose there'll be nothing horrific if we hit play on this very innocuous video.
All right, here we go. We're going to hit play.
What a miracle. Those raindrops are suspended in midair. They're just floating in there as if by some sort of magic.
Those don't look like raindrops.
They're looking biggy and floaty and...
What are they doing? Can you describe what's
hovering? And it's like, and I don't see wings. It seems like things in the sky should have wings. It starts to look like maybe we're looking through a window and the window is covered with bugs that are just sort of hanging out on there.
Brian obviously doesn't know anything about nature.
I mean, I guess. Justin, what does this read as to you?
Yeah, I don't know. It does look like they're just suspended there, but they are jittering about a little bit. Like they are kind of it does look like a
jitterbugs. They're elderly people. But jitterbugging.
Yeah, but not the actual bug, the phone.
yeah. Okay. Man, I can't tell if it's the parallax seems slightly off. At one point the camera moves and everything shifts in a way that makes me think that they're not way up in the sky. They're just close, and these are bugs or spiders or something.
Well, we'll use the term rain. Rain's beautiful. Rain's something that, you know, companies that make things like, I don't know, skin soaps and shampoos, think of rain. Rain's just sounds so nice. We'll just call it rain.
Sure. What is it raining, Andrew?
Nature.
You're not wrong. It's raining bugs or eggs or I swear to God, if it's snakes, it's good. No. It's oh my goodness. I don't know what I'm looking at. It looks like a bunch of fleas. It looks like fleas on a window.
Okay.
Well, Brian, you know what it is.
Spiders, isn't it? It's always spiders.
Spiders. It's raining spiders.
It rained spiders?
Yeah. So basically what they've done is they've like, you know, like they get this in Australia too, but in Brazil, basically thousands of spiders have created webs that go from canopy to canopy all across there. And so they're kind of like hanging out, and then, you know, every now and then maybe they just drop on down and say hello, but basically you'd be surrounded by spiders everywhere.
Okay.
So these spiders are on their, the canopies that they've created are suspended in midair, and that's kind of what has this look of them being in the sky.
The surreality of it, yeah. So
Cirque du Soleil spider.
Now I can sort of see it. If you imagine an invisible mesh network of spider webs everywhere, then it makes sense that the whole sky is just hovering spiders above you.
Is my favorite headline, Smithsonian.com. You know that rag. It's raining spiders in Brazil. A video captures images of 1,000 spiders raining down on a Brazilian town, but it turns out this event is perfectly normal.
Aw.
I mean, for you, person writing on Smithsonian.com, I'm here trying to deal with the fallout of my Airbnb prices in Spider Villa.
Maybe you're just selling to the wrong people. Turn that bug into a feature, so to speak.
That's it. You'll be guaranteed to be surrounded by spiders at all times in this gigantic infestation that comes from all angles.
Except Bryce, another video that spins around and shows more of this, and it's we already talked about the fact if the spiders wanted to eat people, spiders would win. There's more spiders. The spiders are perfectly capable of eating us all in like a year, you know.
So. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, this is definitely the end of God.
Oh God damn it. That's a fat bug.
This is the end of Kingdom of the Spiders with William Shatner. Like made life. Wow.
So this is just a gigantic, this is like the Great Web of China. Like this is just gigantic.
They're, oh God,
imagine
it's horrific.
A real estate agent trying to show off a house in that neighborhood.
Although I got to tell you,
not just take a flamethrower to this place.
Well, where are the birds? That's what I'm saying. You know, we got to deal with their squawking, waking us up, you know, and all this. Like, do your job, birds.
Well, I feel like next it's got to be a cloud. I mean, number one.
Ah, it's a big old spider. Good God.
I got to believe.
These are not tiny spiders. These are big, fat, 18-wheeler spiders doing big spider business.
Oof. Good news is I have to imagine there are very few mosquitoes about. Like, outside of all the spiders everywhere. Oh, my God, it really is. It's raining spiders.
They are, to illustrate this, they are have taken over this power, this telephone pole, and are hanging, dripping.
Oh, my God.
Hundreds of them.
The chills that are running up and down my spine. This is horrifying.
They're launching spam campaigns. They've plugged into the information grid. It's all over. Next up is going to be a swarm of birds, the likes of which you've never seen, followed by a swarm of cats, followed by a swarm of old ladies who love cats. It's all downhill from here.
Yeah, this is one of those things where somebody's going to want to introduce the invasive species, right? Like, then it's like, oh, we'll get the number one spider eater is some aardvark, and then the aardvarks will go wild and
call in the vark. He was like, hey, man, I told you I don't do that anymore. I just fix pickup trucks. Listen, Vark, we need you. Hey, I haven't been called that in a long time.
You know I wouldn't call you if I wasn't desperate.
There's always another spider that needs eaten. I've had my fill, I tell you.
I want to take our attention away from spiders now. And I want to show you something kind of cool. When it's relaxed, no spiders. Well, there's technically no spiders in this one.
Oh.
You ever think about light speed? Just think about light speed, like how fast is light speed?
I'm told it's pretty fast. Can't think of anything faster than it. Yeah. Except gossip, am I right?
Right. So I found this really cool, an article where a guy went out and created some graphics showing you light speed. How long does it take light to go around the Earth? Light traveling from the Earth to the Moon. And just as a way to visualize this, light going from Earth to Mars. So here we're watching a beam of light go around a globe, and it gives you an idea of 7.5 orbits per second. Right?
7 laps around the Earth per second. Okay, I can almost wrap my mind around that.
Mm-hmm. Now let's go look at the Moon.
I think that's 2 seconds, right? It's 2 seconds to get there?
1.25 seconds surface to surface.
Okay.
So we're watching like a ping pong ball go between the Boop. Earth and the Moon. It's in air. Boop. Left the Moon, Boop. Hit Earth. Boop. Moon, Boop. Earth.
Yeah.
So all I could see, like, this Earth. Is the moment where Doom breaks down and you're not going to have a good game of Doom because your lag will be 1.25 seconds. You could still play Hearthstone, though. That's fine.
But looking at that and seeing, like, man, this is the fastest thing. You can't go faster than that. And you're like, wow, like, you can't go faster than that, you know? Now let's go to Mars.
Oh, I know this one. This one, depending on the time of year, what, 15 minutes?
3 minutes.
Yeah, this is its closest, which is at 3 minutes, 2 seconds.
Oh, my God.
So, Girl from Ipanema's playing.
We're just watching. You know. You can't even play Hearthstone. Like,
The data's so bad.
Yeah. Like,
well, wait a minute. Hey, Brian, what's like an average episode of Modern Rogue?
About 5 to 15 minutes. So
you're not even to the ad. You're not even to the NordVPN ad by the time that you arrive on Mars.
Yeah, you're not kidding, man. And you know, but the good news is when I hit send, it'll be 3 minutes and 2 seconds before I get my first hateful comments in response.
No, they'll just send them ahead of time, Brian. You know, now imagine looking at that little text bubble, waiting to see what they're going to write, and then it just vanishes. You're like, oh, gosh.
The entire time we've been talking, that point of light has only made it halfway to Mars. That's amazing.
Yeah, think about, too, is that we've mentioned this before, like, when we're going to want to talk to our friends on Mars when we send, you know, Bryce there, it's going to be in text messages. You know, it's going to be in little, you know, videos. It's going to be little video and sound bites and stuff. We're not going to be this show's going to be really hard.
We're
going
to send letters. It's going to be a thrill. Oh, here's an interesting thing. How quick before somebody starts selling the idea of virtual conversations with AI proxies that after the fact it will they'll correct and match what the person like we're predictable creatures, right? So imagine like you could write a letter, wait the 15 minutes for it to deliver, wait for the 15 minutes to get a letter back or whatever, and that would be accurate but very slow communication. Or I could turn on virtual Andrew, we could talk, and then and both avatars are factoring in giving most likely answers that each party is going to do, and then on important stuff, clarifying and shaping the conversation. So it feels almost real time.
That's all fun and good until you get into a fight with your friend's AI or your family member's AI. Like, because now you have a question of, okay, well, I just got into a fight with your AI, like, based on most likely things that you would say. Is that real? Is it not real? Is you know, should we wait the AI to be nicer, maybe? Then
the challenge going to be, like Brian brought up earlier, the idea of having AIs to sort of help us be better or be smarter, is that, well, am I going to have my AI with my short temper?
Well, but think about this. None of us will have to actually apologize anymore, because it's like just the slider will be like, hey, AI, just be really fast to apologize. Just eat all the garbage and say it's always your fault. But don't make me watch or listen to it. so I don't have to feel that.
Brian, a lot of Brian's views of the future is plausible deniability.
It's the most Brian thing ever. It's just... I need an AI to tell me what to do and make me never apologize.
Yes.
My favorite was I brought up when I went to one of the Nick Bostrom horror stories about AI is like, what if it just puts us on our brains on a dish and just triggers our pleasure sensors? You know, they take us over and we're vats just having our pleasure sensors triggered nonstop. And Brian's like, okay.
Sounds great, man. Yeah. Sounds like a world where I'm just ecstatic all the time.
But Brian, you know, you're everything else. I wouldn't care, would I? I'm like, well, no. All right, then.
By definition, I'm loving it. McDonald's promise made real.
We're getting more and more headlines, though, about, like, uploading, you know, being able to save your brain to a computer chip, which is a complete, you know, BS right
yep.
now.
Yeah.
But, you know, and there's the, you know, people like, oh, well, you upload, it's not you. Like, well, that's why we talk a lot about sideloading here. The idea of, like, have that thing working concurrently, dealing with stuff and then updating me and then maybe backing some memories up. And because I was thinking about this the other day, like, you have that period where you're talking and you're like, oh, what's the name of that actor? And it takes you 8 seconds later and you remember the name, you know? And like, man, and you know, it's there, but it's just which valley that's memory stored in. Having that little prompt tells you that.
Well,
sounds good to me.
Even, you know, you're wearing your augmented reality glasses and the AI is listening and can tell in the first three words of your sentence, based on your past history of the way you talk, where you're likely headed with this point, and then starts, you know, displaying the name before you even get to that valley part. Like I know what story you're about to tell. You're going to want to say Ed Harris.
Yeah, I want one that tells me to shut up. You've already told them the story. You know, I'm at that point. I want one that's like, you're about to explain something. You've already explained. You're in the car. You're like, Justin and I have this. And we'll start going like, wait, this was conversation number 382, wasn't it?
I think Andrew, there was a point in Florida where I think Andrew and I reached the end of the internet with each other's brains. Like, we got to a point where it was just like, man, you spend that much time with somebody, you're going to know literally every story in their lives.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I liked it. It was fine. It was cool.
Yeah, that's what it was. Hey, what are you some picks?
Yeah,
my pick is All's Well, the new comedy album from Night Attack, debuting tomorrow on the 22nd. Hey, listen, sometimes the price will be right. Sometimes it won't be fixed. If you have the money, then throw it at us. If you want to wait and buy it many times on many platforms, you can wait for the price to go down. But know that a targeted strike really matters, and if we hit number one on all three platforms, it pretty much guarantees us having a number one Billboard comedy album, which is the greatest gift we could give Stephen Cogswell, the greatest gift to music. We don't give a rat's ass about the money. We only give, we only want to reward the hardest, most talented of fans in all of chat room.
Yeah.
Very, very magnanimous of you guys.
Yes. All's Well, a Night Attack album available on the 22nd, which is tomorrow for most of you. I do have another pick, though.
Oh, okay.
I watched the Netflix version of the Fyre Festival doc. This, I believe, is just Fyre, right? It's, the Netflix one is just called Fyre. The other one's Fyre Fraud.
It's Fyre, yeah. The Greatest Party That Never Happened.
Okay. It is a pretty great doc in that, like, I thought I knew I was getting into it, getting into with it, and it did an effective job of peeling back the layers beyond just like, oh, well, how could something go wrong, to understanding a little bit more about this guy that put it together. And it's got some great anecdotes. There's one about releasing the water they were going to use on the island. That is, I can't imagine what it was like getting that dude to tell that story on camera in the way that he did. Just awesome.
What was it that he said? Because I did watch it. I don't remember the water story, though, because I watched both of them back to back.
Man, I don't even know if I want to give it away.
Okay, all right.
He says he was called upon to make sure that the water got released by a government agent, and he was willing
that
to do
story. Yes.
Everything.
Yes, this is a great story.
Everything possible, he including was a very specific charge that he was given.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Strongly encourage you to watch the Hulu one as well.
Fyre Fraud.
Yeah, we were going to, and then we just kind of ran out of time. But that's definitely the next thing that we want to do. What was your favorite amongst the two?
I don't know how much of it was the order in which I watched it, but I think the Hulu one was better. Did you watch both, Bryce?
No, I only saw the Hulu one, and I didn't get a chance to watch the Netflix one. But I really liked that they actually had the creator, one of the not Ja Rule creator of the Fyre Festival, they got an interview with him, and they seemed like they put the screws to him pretty decently in the Hulu one.
You know, what's interesting is that the way the two document, I haven't seen either, but the way the two of them worked is one of them worked with the guy who put it on to get permission to use some photos and stuff like this or whatever for that. The other one worked with one of the ad agencies that was in charge of promoting the Fyre Festival to get their access. So both of them have, and that may have affected the kind of coverage where, you know, the ones that worked with the organizer kind of were like, well, let's make an indictment of that. But overall, the culture around what's going on, and then, you know, the business or whatever. And then, you know, the other one, it's sort of the different perspectives on it based upon who was their source for that.
I'll say the Hulu one definitely focuses more, from my understanding, focuses more on the McFarlane guy, and I don't think it paints him in a good light, even though, like, even knowing that Hulu said that they paid him for.
Oh no! Did they pay him, or did they pay the ad agency?
The Hulu one paid him for his interview, yeah. And Netflix let the ad agency partner produce their movie.
I'm curious to know. I'm curious to see the Hulu one, because having watched the Netflix one, I don't know really even what the worth of having an interview with that guy is, considering the stuff that is there. Yeah, he is certainly going to say words, but man, if there's not a fairly clear case to be made that he is a dead-eyed fraud sociopath.
The funny part about watching both of them are when they both dip into the common pool of media, like some of the Instagrams,
the social media posts.
So it's like, it's kind of awesome to hear the same story just told two different ways. And I would love for there to be more experiences like this where you could get two versions of it. And you're like, oh yeah, I know this part because I've heard this story.
Here's the only thing that I found a little stupid about the Netflix one is that like they tend to lean into like, oh wow, you want to know what though? This guy was kind of a Pied Piper. He kind of figured out how to make an event that would make millennials care, that really really whipped up a bunch of attention and so much free press. And it's like, yeah. You know, the easiest way to make $1 million is to have $1 billion and fritter it away. Like he wrote a million checks he couldn't cash. And even if you had that amount of money to spend on that, the idea that the juice would be worth the squeeze is probably negligible. Like that's not amazing. That's not new. That doesn't make you a great brander or a marketer to just spend a bunch of money you don't have. To like, yes, if you had all the world at your fingertips, you could make an app. You could have a successful booking app, which is what he ultimately wanted to do.
Brian, you saw both of them. Mm-hmm. What I loved in the Hulu one was them talking about his career before the festival and like selling tickets to events and shows that he didn't have, like Hamilton tickets and the Super Bowl stuff.
And just sort of, you know, figure it out as he goes along.
Yeah.
You know, his Magnesis was his thing, the super exclusive, badass VIP card that was just filled with promises. And then it was like, hey, you want tickets to Hamilton? We got them for $250. And you're like, that's not possible. I'll take a few. And then,
and then he buys them on StubHub the night of or the night before,
just all the time saying like, hey, come on over, you'll get the VIP concierge experience.
Did the Hulu one get into like his early career stuff like that?
It's very difficult for me to remember
Magnesis
is mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, basically the Netflix one kind of saves the reveal on how like basically it lets you get through the 3/4 of the documentary, assuming that this is the story of a brilliant but over aggressive entrepreneur who everybody believes in and everybody thinks is great, who just flew a little bit too close to the sun and maybe his drinking got in the way, and maybe they don't mention coke, but look, they're on an island with supermodels, let's just assume that maybe that kind of got in the way, and he burned out. And then about 3/4 of the way, they start talking about, oh yeah, like the fact that he's the visionary behind Magnesis, and then it's like, oh no, like nobody really went to these things, and a lot of people would buy these things, and then the perks would fall through, and he was basically just living off the largesse of the 1%.
The Hulu one has a very hard focus about like you know, he's out on bail for fraud, and then and they have a whole section where it's just like, okay, of all the times to go right back and double down on everything that got you in trouble, because apparently like at first everybody, they're getting these emails, they're like, oh, you must have sold the fire list to somebody, yeah, and somebody else is trying to do it. We're like, nope, it was literally him
trying to promote something else to the people who bought tickets.
Exactly,
to the fire
literally
house.
Standing in the room feeding lines to somebody so it wouldn't sound like him. Like, now tell him this. That, like, it's amazing.
He just did the Magnesis scam, but instead of making that the perks of why you should have his credit card, they made it the product and would just say, hey, we got a Taylor Swift meet and greet. Hey, we have Burning Man tickets. When they were Taylor Swift doesn't do meet and greets, and Burning Man tickets were not on sale, and he still racked up like six figures, like just doing that with three people in a room. Like, but again, that's the thing, is the story here, and I've not seen the Hulu one, but I do understand that it goes into a little bit more of a cultural focus, that there is a reason why there's a little bit of a late stage capitalism kind of element to it. But
the story here is this is a fraud sociopath who just took in a bunch of people. You know, he figured out the right people that he could tell the right things, and that was that. Like, there is it was a fascinating story. I suggest people pay attention to it, but I thought the Netflix one was very, very well strung out in that, like, you think it's one story, and then you just realize, like, oh no, this guy is just the, you know, he's trying to, you know, he's the music man, but for Diplo.
So where do I get one of these Magnesis credit cards? Sounds like a great
I have a pick. I am a buddy of had given me a Christmas gift of one of those little those PlayStation classics. Shrunk down PlayStations. And I was excited about it because I really like PlayStation growing up. But I was also excited because all of these classic mini consoles that have been made, people have like hacked them and done all sorts of stuff. And I was about to like dive into that process of like, you know, do the thing and get the files and move them over here and do all this other stuff. When I realized that apparently that hack stuff was not as far as it was, but it reminded me of this really great piece of software, RetroArch. Do you guys know RetroArch?
Mm-mm.
So it's like an emulator hub, basically. So like it is a piece of software that has these different console cores. So there's like a PlayStation core and a Game Boy Advance core, and it acts like a mediator between all that stuff. And it was really cool because I had not ever done like any sort of emulation stuff since like in the past decade when emulators were a lot different. And so it was interesting to kind of see both something that was super like feature rich in that like it has like 1,000 save slots and like they have achievements built in. You could like download achievements for like these retro games. But the other cool thing that I really dug and took up a lot of my weekend is that they have RetroArch on like a million different platforms, including on the Switch. And so I definitely spent probably 10 hours this weekend playing Final Fantasy VIII on my Switch. And it's pretty cool. And it's one of those things where just doing it, like, it's not very complicated, but doing any sort of technology thing is just sort of a fun puzzle on its own. And so I really had a good time with that. And they like literally have these emulators available for like phones and tablets and all sorts of stuff. So if you own your own games and you know how to dump them, you should try RetroArch to play them.
Right on.
I have a pick. You know, I'd watched the first Narcos series, which they did three seasons of, and then Netflix announced they're doing Narcos Mexico. And usually I'm always like, oh, I'll get around to it. Then I'll get into it. And I always dig into it. And I thought Narcos, the original one, sometimes it could be a little soap operish, but then when it was really good, it was exceptionally good. And overall enjoyed it. So I said, oh, let's watch this. And it had Michael Pena in it. So I'm like, oh, cool. I like him and Diego Luna. Really good cast. So I said, let me watch this. And I didn't know anything about other than they're doing Narcos Mexico. And I see in the first minute, it's going to be the story of Kiki Camarena, who, growing up in a law enforcement family, and my father, the division my father was, that's actually mentioned in there when they talk about the Caribbean route being shut down. That's what my father did during the drug war with, you know, his the Haida task forces. They were the ones that, you know, shut that down. And so this is how the drug trade shifts through Mexico. But hearing this about Kiki Camarena, I'm like, oh, well, this will be interesting because I don't want a spoiling for you in his story, but he is his story of an amazing DEA agent. And this is the kind of the start of the drug war really, really escalating. So season one starts with this, and then you get Scoot McNairy's actually doing the narration for it. And season two picks up with him and whatnot. But I really enjoyed Narcos Mexico. So highly recommend it.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm not going to spoil anything. If you don't know what that name, his name means or why, watch this. Watch this. It's really, really interesting. So, cool. It's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.